Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast The Health Hunters. My name is Fernando here.
And I'm Roxanne.
Hello Roxanne. So for you, we'll just jump into our channel up here, just explaining a little bit what we are doing here. Roxanne, can you tell?
So what we do, we are very passionate about health. So we are looking into different topics such as medical medicine or the holistic approach, or even about water or food or cultivation.
Yeah, different fields and areas where we're going to explore, like as a pirates, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
like in that way. And
today we have a lovely guest here, yes, Bo. And he's going to talk about
microgreens.
The world of microgreens. By the way, I don't want to start the conversation, but like asking, but where, how, why did your name only have two letters?
The story I heard was that all my nephews were named three letters, and my father thought, I can do you one better, guys.
That's a good for the man, good for the man. Yeah. Nice. You know, that's Bo. Yeah, very simple. Not difficult to spell or anything.
Yeah, not the French way.
But yeah, you came here for the microgreens.
That's but a, before we start, Bo, what is your definition of health?
Oh yeah, that's a very good question.
My definition of health. Maybe something along the lines of like durability. Like, I mean, the things that are alive, of course, want to be alive as long as possible. And health for plants or health for people, animals. I think it's a lot about just extending your life, living it in good quality, and that's, yeah, I don't know if that's
that's a very nice answer. Yeah, yeah? And right. How do you do that in your case?
In my case, I have a lot of bad habits. Mm-hmm. Trying to quit smoking. When I was younger, I would go party every weekend, stuff like that, but yeah, and try to compensate a little bit for that. Yeah. And especially since I live in Holland, we have a very, very big food economy. And we don't know a lot about food at all, the most people here. We just eat what's cheapest and tastes best. And five years ago, I really started to get into food and what's healthy and whatnot. And yeah, microgreens were very healthy and very fun way to get better food. You could do it at home. It's, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still not that big in Amsterdam, especially not if you want it organic. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, a fun hobby, growing things. It's easy, productive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But for the listeners, could you explain to me what are actually microgreens, no? Because what is the difference with that? And sprouts, for instance.
Yeah, well, sprouts is just a seed that is germinated and it's looking for nutrition. But it can't find it because you have it without any, usually without sun, but always without soil, a sprout. And a microgreen, it's the seeds when you germinate it, but you have it in a layer of soil. And it can be nutritious poor soil or like real gardening soil with nutrition in it. But just the fact that they're in soil makes them grow further than they would sprouting without soil. And a sprout you would usually eat after two days after germination, and a microgreen is usually 7 to up to 14 days after germination. When the plant is very small, the first leaves show, the first real set of leaves, of course, when a seed pops, it has these basic leaves called cotyledon. And after that gets the true leaf, where you can see what kind of seed it is, stuff like that. Yeah, you can see the variety in a cabbage, for example. They all look the same with their first leaf, but with their true leaf, you can see that a red cabbage is very red and the others not so much. Mm. Stuff like that. But basically, yeah, when they get to a point of 7 to 14 days and they've been growing in some medium, like soil or some people use, I think now, iron wool. There are all these new mediums that are reusable.
Yeah.
But for me, I have experience with soil.
With soil. And how is done is the propagation? Like, okay, you're saying like this, the soil is doing like this, but these sprouts, they never achieve like full maturity, so they don't really produce seeds themselves. Like how this is how the propagation is done?
Well, it's because mostly because there is a certain density for each seed, how much you can sow on the area, and because they're so close together, they will mature, they will unlock all the nutrients from the seeds, but they will not grow, put all the nutrients into their growth, because they can't. Usually they can't find a lot of food. You grow them in soil that has best is no food, and maybe you add some like nutrition at the last day, mm-hmm. when they're already stored up all their own nutrition. But that makes them come to a point where they don't really grow up to be big plants, but in those days, those 7 to 14 days, they will, yeah, Rich. Take out everything from the seed, which we in our intestines can't take out, and they will transform it into something that's animals and we can eat and can unlock. So that's basically the, yeah, like one of the ways it's nutritious, because it unlocks things that are only unlockable by the seed itself when it's growing.
Yeah, we see microgreens like in different I probably the first time I counted into microgreens was in some restaurant here, and noticed that bits of salads then, you know, was on top of the plate, but I never understood what was that for. But besides of being like a fashion thing to put it in fancy plates, it also have a nutrition value.
I looked up some history today and in preparation for the
podcast. Yeah, you did have some homework.
Yeah. And the thing is that the sprouts have always been eaten for health. It's very easy to make them, even in ancient times when you have the seeds. It was, as old as time. But the microgreens, they started becoming a thing in America around 1980 as really garnishing for the dishes because they looked so good. Yeah. And there was no real studies in the nutritional value. There was no mass use of it, or there was only like garnishing.
Yeah, make the plate a little bit more.
Yeah, because some of them are very pretty, of course. Yeah. Like this little micro version of a real vegetable. It's and they have a strong taste. So also that you can taste them actually in small amounts. And then there started to be a lot of studies onto the health benefits of it. And even now you can find a lot of studies, and most of them really end with pushing for even more studies because it's it's a new subject. It's a new plant, but basically that we eat, because in nature you would not consume it that much. You would, maybe if you, animals would consume it, of course, in small, very small quantities, because these are the baby plants and the very small plants that you would not come across very often. But yeah, there is much to know about it still. And most things that they know about it now is that the nutritional values are usually 4 to 40 times higher than their mature counterparts. And in some cases, there's some things that are 250 times more, like the rare cases.
Yeah.
But it's averaged between the 4 and the 40 times. And just those studies being done really got a hype going with all the, the people that are into healthy food, healthy eating, which in America is not a huge part, but the part in America that is very much, I think, in that time about healthy eating, really pushed off against the rest of society and became really into it, doing a lot of studies. And that's kind of got it famous the last 10 years because of the nutritional value. I still see some restaurants, I know they still use it as like decoration, but mostly now, especially in the States, if you look it up, it's being sold like as boxes with 100 or 200 grams, really to add to your diet.
To add
in good amounts.
But how much do you think a person needs to eat to have that benefit? You know, like what is in terms of diet, how much of the microgreens are needed to be sustainable for being able to take a diet on it?
On it? Well, if you use it, let's say if you use it like a supplement for lettuce and other cold salads you would normally eat, I think about 4 trays, and a tray is about 0.5 meter long, 15-20 centimeters broad. I think 4 of those trays a week, 4 of those trays, and you will get new ones each week, because you only need to keep them in the sun for 7 days, So I usually have a layer of trays below it that are in their darkness period. And then when they are 7 days or 5 days old, you put them in the light. So then they don't need a lot of light for it. And I think that would be a good amount for just one person. But that's if you don't eat any other salads. And realistically speaking, we're of course salads, and they're cheap food, they're abundant, they're good for you. So a lot of people eat them in good amounts. I wouldn't say you need a lot of microgreens to it. You can be perfectly healthy without, especially if you don't get a lot of these raw vegetables in your diet. Yeah, they could be like very instrumental part to having a healthy diet.
Yeah, sounds like I could spare a few centimeters in my house to grow a few trays of it, right, Roxanne?
Yeah, if you want to eat microgreens all the time.
Yeah, I think I could live with that. Yeah. If they could live with me, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And you grow your own microgreens.
Mm-hmm.
And how, for the people who are interested of starting and growing your own microgreens, what do you need in your...
Oh, there are some really
space.
Good microgreen shops that have like a whole listing of it. But basically, you can grow it in your window in small amounts. But if you grow it in big amounts, you would have like one layer of a closet or anything, put a light in there and use the space under the lights for them. I wouldn't say much space.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in an average kitchen cabinet, you would need two of those cabinets layers.
Yeah.
And the lights are very cheap, because some plants, they need very expensive lights that have a lot of wavelengths. But again, like the microgreens, it's really about the seed unlocking the nutrients, but the plants unlocking the nutrients from the seed. So the light source doesn't need to be a very good light, just something that's triggers them to grow. So any light with like a wide spectrum, I use lights that are meant for schools that have nothing to do with agriculture or horticulture or anything like that. But as long as it triggers them, it's fine.
Yeah.
So even with your household lights, most of your bright white household lights would trigger them enough.
CFLs type of light, or T5s, that's ones. I quite normally use it for propagation of plants, right? Houseplants, indirect.
Kind of lights.
So just checking the list appear that I'm doing right now at the same time that we are doing up here talking. So it's light, soil, anything that is needed for...
The seeds, of course.
The genetics, yes, exactly.
And with microgreens, I would always advise to get organic seeds. Because the amounts of pesticides and residues found in the seeds that are allowed are based on the seeds being grown again into a big plant. So those percentages can be pretty high in your diet if you eat them as small plants.
Mm-hmm.
And with organic farming, there are no residues that are very harmful for us. So that's something that I would really look into, because of course the residue that you find in the carrot seeds, and then you grow the carrot for a year in good soil and stuff, there's little of it left. It's you can easily call it safe. But when you eat it as a very small plant and you don't give it any nutrition or anything else, and it unlocks everything from the seeds, I think that might be a risk. Especially when microgreens becomes popular and grown in huge quantities, and they start selling the seeds in big quantities. And of course, keeping the price down, because seeds are, the microgreens are expensive for mostly the reason that the seeds are kind of expensive. So that's a thing I would not,
Yeah, I also imagine the demand at the moment also is higher.
It's very high
for many other reasons. Even like as you said, this was something was used for decorating plates in restaurants, to be something that you find in supermarkets, and then also incentivizing people to grow by themselves. So the quality of the strains of genetics are also something that matters.
Yeah, the genetics not so much, because tomato genetics, for example, the way a tomato grows, the way it flowers, it has very little to do with the way it is as a small plant. Mm-hmm. So the genetics, it's really how the plant that gives the seed has been treated. Seeds can be expensive. I also today I read that tomato seeds per pound or per kilo are more expensive than gold.
Tomato,
tomato seeds, yeah.
Seriously,
yeah. So that's
In terms of weight, I can see that. But it is quite funny because you can tomato seeds are quite easy available to find it, right? Like it's not something. It's difficult even to extract the seed from the tomato fruit. Something you can actually.
Of course, viable tomato seeds. Many of the plants that are grown in the big glass houses. I've lost the English name for it.
The greenhouse.
Yeah, the greenhouses. Often it's not viable seeds. So for growing tomatoes, like. Seeds for growing tomatoes are as expensive as gold, but same with some other seeds are really expensive, but same for like lentils. You can buy lentils to eat and they're seeds and they're not so expensive, but if you buy them from the store for microgreens, they're a bit more expensive because they're all
use it for
they're all I say viable, but I don't know if that's the correct word. When something is,
I think it's viable.
And they're all viable then.
You mentioned earlier the way microgreens look like, but can you? You've mentioned about the flavor, the taste of it, because I off air we were actually mentioning about the different types of microgreens and flavors and how can that in have different influences of the composition of the microgreens, like the flavonoids, right, and other compounds that make. Can you explain a little bit, like more about how to describe actually the taste of the microgreens?
It's mostly like a little bit more intense taste of the grown plant.
Yeah,
and you have some microgreens that's. Are the plants that we don't eat, but we eat the seeds from, like lentils and stuff like that. Yeah. So they will have a very unique taste. Yeah. Very fun to find out all those tastes. But for a plant like a cabbage or a broccoli, from which we eat the actual plant and the stem, they taste very similar, only more intense. And some of them I really like the taste.
It's bitter, spicy.
Yeah, like. Bitter spicy, you have the beets have the little beet taste. Arugula has a really like the same taste that is great to do over pasta or something. Onion microgreens are amazing. Onion microgreens are really, because people know often the spring onions when an onion is grown for maybe a few months.
Yeah.
But microgreen onion is really, the taste is really, really good.
It's sweet. I had an idea that you get the sweet flavor in onions. Yeah.
But also really this the flavor that makes onions so great as like a topping on all these dishes, like and sandwiches and stuff like that.
What's your favorite one?
Probably red cabbage.
Why?
Because the taste is good and a little mild, and it's very pretty to look at. Grows very good.
It grows good.
Some of them are a little harder to do. Like, for example, basil microgreens can be kind of hard. You have this very beautiful looking red pinkish microgreen called amaranth. Very tasty, but also a little bit hard. They all need airflow and other things to really keep healthy. And some of the other microgreens, they don't need really stuff like that. They will grow fine without, but some do. Corn is really nice microgreen, only you can never let them see the light, because as soon as they see the light, they'll become terrible tasting.
Oh, wow. They can,
then they taste like a corn plant.
Wow.
And before they see the light, when it's just the corn going through all these stages of 5-6 days germination, it tastes really good. Like like some super sweet version of a baby corn that you see in these wok dishes.
No. Ooh, nice. Yeah.
That's also one of my favorites.
Excellent. The flavors again to the of the microgreens. You on Offler, you're mentioning about this study of the flavonoids, and you're explaining to me like, No.
I read the words and I read it has a lot of flavonoids in it, and that it is something not just that causes the flavor, but also is very healthy. But more than that, I didn't register from.
Because as in a previous podcast episode that we have with Pure, we talk about actually the flavonoids of different plants, because we have like other a channel on this podcast. Excuse me, my Latin. He's talking about like plants and. It is a nice one, right?
It's a good one. What are flavonoids again?
I'm not even sure.
I love flavonoids. The flavonoids are.
Do you know?
They do have many
flavors.
Come from. Of course, the word flavonoid came from there, mainly because they are responsible for the flavor of things. But they also do have functions of plants. For instance. Anthocyanins is responsible to the purple color in fruits and leaves that are and turn purple. Normally happens when it's too hot or too cold or too much light in the plant. And the mechanism of defense, the plant start to produce this chemical compound called anthocyanin to block the UV light from the sun, or changes in pH of water, for instance. You have many functions in a sense, like the flavonoids and terpenes are responsible for the smell, right?
Going to, in that direction.
Yeah,
I get you.
They are all chemical compounds. If you see, like, this is the way.
Then a chemist background. Okay.
No, but it's
a chemist. All right.
Yes. Yeah. No, but it is quite nice to see how plants how we start to isolate it like compounds. Then it has influences in people, right? I mean, since when we are starting using, like. Microgreens is such a novel techniques, right?
Yeah,
but it has so much things to explore, and only recently the studies are being conducted.
Yeah, it's really last 10 years that it's becoming an accepted health thing and not just a little niche of
right. And we've been studying plants for thousands of years, right?
Yeah, it's funny how many plants that are not eatable at all. Are very edible as a microgreen and stuff like that.
Because they don't find full potential as being toxic.
Yeah, stuff like that, or just not tasting good anymore.
It happens with basil actually. Yeah. For me, when the basil start to give flowers.
Yeah, terrible.
Oh yeah, I'll keep the seeds though. They are easy to keep.
Yeah, if you have a lot of seeds from your flowering basil plants, try doing some microgreens with them, because microgreen basil tastes really, really good.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
especially when they just have their first two leaves and they get bigger.
But you said that's the one that's the most difficult one to grow, right?
It's one of the more difficult ones.
And why is that?
As soon as they get wet, they get. They don't germinate like normal seeds. They get like a gel coating each seed as soon as it gets wet, like a reaction. It makes them stick to a lot of things like the trays and stuff like that. You really need to cover the seeds good. You can overwater them easily. You can underwater them easily. Again, if they have too much space, they'll grow big. If they have too little space, but not a good airflow, they'll also not grow good, so they have a lot of little. Yeah, most of the microgreen, there's a lot of listing of all the microgreens and how much to sow them, how long to wait for them, just a whole guide. And you will always, with almost everyone I saw, you will see like beginner levels for most of them, and a few of them average with, watch out for this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
But most of them are very easy.
Yeah.
So don't get discouraged by...
just start with the beetroots.
Yeah, the beetroots and the broccoli. Yeah. Stuff
and
like that.
Do you grow anything else in your place?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of stuff?
A lot of other plants. I am currently working with a seed company, so I'm testing a lot of their plants. It's very nice. Berry plants, cannabis berry plants. Mm. And I've been doing that for, half a year now, but the microgreens and the other vegetables go back some longer. Mm. So I'm also going into a new field here, but it's very much fun. It's a lot of strange matter in that field. So yeah, it's very different.
You have a comedy nature in yourself, though.
Whoa, I'm a very serious person. Why do you say these things to me?
The way you talk about the microgreens, it looks like you are a serious person. But the way I know you, like, you are resembling in...
Goofy.
You say goofy. Or you
goofy
just,
movie.
Is it a goofy movie, or you just a person who have a lot of attention? And you know...
I need a lot
of attention. No, you pay attention to what people, the way people react. Because you have like a very good sense of humor.
Oh,
yeah, as
thank
self.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you for the compliment. It's not on air, right?
Yeah. I hope it is, because I'm complimenting you like this way. Supposed to be on air. I have one question.
Such a kind person.
A kind person, yes. Yeah.
Intuitive also. Intuitive, smart.
By the way, just to continue to compliment, do you cook? Do you cook?
Yeah, but I have like 4 or 5 recipes that I can cook very well, and I just repeat them every week.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
He's a consistent person.
I am terrible at new things.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what are the 4 recipes?
Oh.
Any of those, and that will be your favorite to take to a desert island, and they say like, yeah, I will eat that.
My favorite?
Yeah,
your
no,
favorite one.
No, they're just 5. I'll name them all. One is chili, one is spring rolls, one is falafel, one is this round rice, aduki beans, and sauerkraut and onion fried up. I don't know how to call it. That's just what it is. And homemade pesto. Ooh. Homemade pesto.
Oh, yeah, homemade pesto is—it's great.
That's
yeah.
But and you make homemade falafel and spring rolls?
Oh yeah. But
wow.
The falafel I buy at the store. I just make the wrap at home, like a real chef, with the hummus on it and the vegetables.
Yeah.
Nice. But the spring rolls I do make from scratch.
Oh,
they are
wow.
really nice.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I just buy rice sheets. But I. Well, same principle as the falafel, actually. I roll it up at home.
But you think like that's the secret of a good falafel, for instance, is the one you do it at home, or the ones that you, okay, it will probably not be any secret if you buy like in a store, but it will make a difference on the rest of the plate.
I have this hot sauce I get from a little store always, fermented chili sauce.
Nice.
And that's the key to a good spring roll, to a good falafel. The other dishes, not so much, but I use a lot of sandwiches, and it's great stuff. Fermented chili something.
Yeah.
Also, you can make it at home. I've got a know-how. I've never tried it, but it's very easy to make that at home. Mm. So I'll say it again, fermented chili stuff. Really good.
Yeah, good one.
Sounds good. I mean, fermented foods. I mean, that's now the time to eat it.
Yeah, it's also a way, because you can start to storage things for the winter, and of course the food start to get all fermented. Yeah.
Like sauerkraut.
And how good is that for our microbiome?
Oh, very good.
I had here actually a guest before talking about that.
Her name is Faminia.
Faminia, yes, exactly. Our great friend Faminia. She's also a proper hunter about health.
Oh.
Just shouting Faminia up here. You talked about the fermentation food and microbiome. You were the first person actually I heard about that. Can you explain a little bit more about how can that can help in illness?
Well, the microbiome is, of course, kind of like the fermentation that happens in your body, in your stomach, because your stomach has a lot of life. Most stomachs have a lot of life.
I hope so.
And a lot of natural processes are going on. A lot of good bacteria are formed that help with stuff, and they leak into the guts. They help with other processes in the body. And eating fermented food, eating raw foods, eating anything that is great for these microbiomes, because microbiotics, tiniest living organisms, anything that's good for them, that gives them healthy food and an environment in which they can live and thrive, it's very good for yourself, and it helps in a lot of especially preventive. It can help against a lot of diseases that are very bad, because a lot of those diseases and a lot of the problems that your body gets when it doesn't know what is the enemy anymore. And it's a lot of these, there's a name for it, I lost it, when your body attacks cells that are good.
Autoimmune disease?
Yeah, exactly, that's the name, an autoimmune disease, like diabetes, other diseases. And basically a lot of new studies confirm that a trigger for those diseases is that in your gut there are too many bad bacteria leaking into your stomach into your gut, and that your body gets very confused and doesn't know what is good and bad anymore, and starts attacking cells that are actually essential for you to live, like what happens in type 1 diabetes when they attack the cells that make insulin for you. And a lot of these things, accelerated because people eat things that are conserved, that are not an environment in which any good bacteria can thrive. And the only bacteria that will thrive eventually are very bad ones, new ones, ones that the body doesn't know, that the body doesn't know how to handle. So, especially for people who drink a lot of soft drinks with conservative, who eat a lot of conserved foods, I really like a few days, just try to not do it and get some microbiome going, because I hear with this very real thing these days that people even are doing fecal transplants to get the bio processes and from other people that are healthy, and they will do a transplant of that person's fecal matter, that person's poopy, into their own I don't know, not their stomach, of course, but the end of your intestine.
The colon, yeah.
Yeah, the colon, so that you get those biomes. And that does not sound like a fun procedure to me.
Basically collecting different types of bacteria, culture them, and then inserting them onto somebody's body. It looks like so much of engineering, like, basic process. Actually, it is probably just as simple as the way you are describing.
Keep it healthy.
Just keep it healthy. Yeah, but it is quite interesting, at least for people like us, want to have a much healthier practice,
a healthier gut,
right? Yeah. A healthier gut. Looking at least at the microgreens to be, besides of being looking super fun, fast to see. You know, easy and small space to having, you can make it in your own house, growing microgreens.
Yeah, just this inch of dirt on a plate and a handful of seeds on there, and boom, you'll have microgreens.
So such a rich
rich
supplement.
Supplement would be great. That's for the microbiome, for all the little nutrients that are in there, the minerals, all the contents that are so much higher than in the mature versions of those raw foods. All around a great addition. And there's no downside to them. They're very healthy. They don't have anything that we don't want in our body. There's no eating too much of them. There's really no negative thing to say about them.
Yeah, hopefully more and more of this information will be spread out and seeing like more of these, you know, stores having microgreens setups to people growing in their own, finding solutions for it. Yeah.
A lot of people do it with cress. Do you see it sometimes, especially maybe it's a Dutch thing. We call it tuinkers, but in English it's called cress, and you will see it often growing as like a small plant in the kitchen because it's very peppery. It has a very peppery taste. People add it to dishes could do normally with a lot of pepper on them. And they don't need much to grow either. They don't need nutrition. They need sunlight to trigger them. And I think that's, a lot of other seeds could really be used in the same way as cress, even though they don't have such an extreme taste, but
I mean, they don't, when you mentioned like they don't need nutrition, or they have enough nutrition for themselves, they don't need to an extra nutrition to be fed.
Your soil can be sand, it doesn't have to be a nutritious soil.
That's good. Well, now we have two questions. Right, these two questions for you, right?
The first one is, do you have a book that's inspired you or changed your life?
Oui. There is a series of books from Zachariah Sitchin, and he writes about ancient aliens and how they... it's off topic, I know, but I saw one of the series one time that I really didn't like, and I saw some other people talking about it, and I always thought it was kind of a ridiculous subject, but very interesting because I love mythology, and they do give a certain way of viewing mythology. And when I read the books from this one writer who's not alive anymore, because he started also a long time ago, and who's really translating the old Sumerian and translating those old things and just presenting the story as he translates it, gave me that really made the whole subject from like some interesting fantasy into wow, this is our real history. So I would advise people to maybe give that a try if they like the ancient mysteries and stuff like that.
Very nice, yeah.
But it has, of course, nothing to do with microgreens.
But it doesn't matter.
I think that's a book that just changed my view a lot. Those books from him.
Cool. Other question. Fernando, do you want to?
Where people can find you?
Oi. in Amsterdam.
Can they be in contact with you if they want to know more about microgreens more about the aliens, if you say so?
Well, the aliens. I don't know much. Just read the nice books from Zachariah Sitchin and don't read the others.
Don't contact me for that because you don't have any contacts with them anyway.
And I don't have any social media or things. And
okay.
I've done enough sharing.
No, it's never enough. Never enough. Because I hope to have you again here in our wonderful show to talk a little bit more about microgreens and cultivation.
Ah, or aliens? Who knows?
Or aliens?
Who knows? Maybe boats.
Or more history.
Or history.
It's no one without the other.
Well, Bo, thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Oh, thank you guys, too.
So, Fernando, what did you learn?
Oh, wow, this was a very, very interesting show. I'm already thinking about where to put the microgreens.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to wait until the middle of the summer to start growing them. Because you can start growing the microgreens.
Now. Start now.
No.
Try the beetroot.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to start them now. I'm just going to get like my seeds and start them. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, people. This was it.
It was a great one. Great show indeed.
You can find us on the Instagram THH or send us an email if you have any questions.
Oh, I love this song. Love this. So bye. Everyone.
Bye.